Hey, welcome everybody. You are listening to United Public Radio Network live with Voice of the People Radio. This is our Tuesday night edition. It's traditionally, since we started doing Tuesday night Voice of the People Radio, and we come to you from 10 o'clock to 11 o'clock Eastern time on UPR, and we talk about political things. I guess that's mostly because, you know, people kind of don't have too much of a taste for it on the weekends when we are on Saturdays. So what can you say? You know, things that have been going on today in the United States, polls have closed in Vermont, Connecticut, Minnesota, and Wisconsin. CNN projects that incumbent Senator Bernie Sanders, an independent who caucuses with the Democratic Party, meaning he votes along Democratic Party lines a majority of the time, will win the Democratic nomination in Vermont. No big surprise there, as he has done previously. Bernie Sanders is expected to decline the Democratic Party's nomination and then run as an independent in the general election, thus keeping his status as an independent intact. For the fourth time, Democrats in Wisconsin believe they have a chance to finally defeat Governor Scott Walker and steer the state back to the left side of the aisle after 8 years of Republican rule. First, though, the Democratic Party will have to use today's primary to sort through its own crowded field of little-known candidates to find a nominee to oppose Governor Scott Walker in Wisconsin. Now, Tuesday's primary is in two key upper Midwestern states, Wisconsin and Minnesota, will kick off the Democrats' midterm push to capitalize on, get this, big surprise here, President Donald Trump's unpopularity and wrestle back the dominant positions they once held in Wisconsin and Minnesota. The two states there will join Ohio, Michigan, and Illinois on the list of Midwestern battlegrounds, with governor's offices on the ballot this fall that Democrats believe they can win. So Wisconsin, Minnesota, Ohio, Michigan, and Illinois, the Republicans are looking to try to keep governorships there. The Democrats believe that they can win because of the large turnout from the midterm elections. Now, historically speaking, we really haven't seen a large turnout for a lot of these primaries, although we've seen a lot of play for it in the major network news media. Now, Scott Walker, who frustrated Democrats in 2010, rolled back union rights in the state of Wisconsin in 2011. He survived a Wisconsin 2012 recall election, and then he won the governorship again in 2014. Looks like he might be vulnerable to a play by the Democrats there in Wisconsin this year. Although he did survive that 2012 recall election and then won the governorship in 2014, it looks like he might be in for a fight there. A recent poll by the NBC Marist Group found Scott Walker trailing his potential challenger, Tony Evers. Scott Walker has warned Republicans repeatedly that the Republican Party faces what he has called an enthusiasm gap in the progressive candidate's victory in a Wisconsin state Supreme Court election earlier this year buoyed the left's hopes there in Wisconsin. Now, in Wisconsin's wide open Democratic gubernatorial primary, the leading candidate is Evers, who has been the state superintendent of public instruction or schools since 2009. Polls have shown Evers with a lead of at least 3-1, but the highest he's been in any recent public poll is 31%, reflecting how little voters know about the vast field of the potential Scott Walker opponents there in Wisconsin. The two candidates have received the most national attention are firefighter union president Malon Mitchell and former state representative Kelda Royce. Mitchell would become Wisconsin's first black governor. He's endorsed by California Senator Kamala Harris, a potential 2020 presidential candidate. Another 2020 prospect, New York Senator Kristen Gillibrand, has endorsed Roy's. She's also backed by Emily's List, although the group, which backs Democratic women running for office, hasn't spent as heavily in Wisconsin as it has in some other state races this year. Interesting way of putting, you know, how that type of funding has come through on the Democratic side, isn't it? Five other candidates are in that race, including Senator Kathleen Vinehout, Madison Mayor Paul Soglin, former state Democratic Chairman Matt Flynn, and activist Mike McCabe and attorney Josh Pade. So it's a very, very crowded situation there. And we'll just have to see how these primaries actually run down as the polls have closed, but the results are not yet in. Minnesota's governor's race. Unlike Wisconsin, Minnesota hasn't totally slipped out of the grasp of what is known there as the Democratic Farmer Labor Party. But the question is, how long the party can hold on to power in Minnesota? Already, the GOP controls the state House and the state Senate. President Trump finished less than 2 percentage points behind Hillary Clinton there in the 2016 general election, raising fears from the Minnesota left that with a comeback by former Republican Governor Tim Pawlenty, the state could soon be ruled exclusively by Republicans for the first time in a half a century and face the same sort of policies like the union busting stripping of collective bargaining rights for public employees that Governor Scott Walker enacted next door in Wisconsin. The leading Democratic candidates are Representative Tim Walz, Attorney General Lori Swanson, and State Representative Aaron Murphy. Swanson's campaign faced a late controversy over the Intercept's report in which former staffers said she had pressured those working in the Attorney General's office to also perform campaign work, charges that Swanson has denied. In the Republican primary, Tim Paul convention himself as a more Trump-like option. Going on to the Wisconsin GOP Senate primary, which the most significant grip on power that Wisconsin Democrats have is Senator Tammy Baldwin's seat. She'll face the winner of a Republican primary today that pits State Senator Leah Vukmir, a darling of conservative talk radio who has the backing of Scott Walker and the state GOP's establishment, against businessman and veteran Kevin Nicholson. What's unusual about the race in Wisconsin is that Illinois businessman Richard Uihlein has pumped nearly $11 million into groups supporting Nicholson, making for a highly unusual tie between a politician and his corporate benefactor. Baldwin has held a clear lead in recent public polls, but Republicans have long believed that the Walker-built political machine and the state's rightward drift could make her a surprisingly ripe target in November. Now, there's a race to replace Paul Ryan. Retiring House Speaker Paul Ryan's first district seat in Wisconsin is one Democrats believe could be competitive this fall. The primary there pits iron worker Randy Iron Stash Bryce against teacher Kathy Myers in what's been a bitter contest locally. Other key House primaries Tuesday come in Minnesota's 1st and 8th districts, perhaps the most two endangered seats currently held by Democrats on the map. Both incumbents are leaving to run for higher office. Now, Representative Keith Ellison, the Democratic National Committee deputy chair and a favorite of Bernie Sanders backers, was expected to win the Democratic nomination to become Minnesota's next attorney general, positioning him to fight the Trump administration in court. But over the weekend, Ellison was accused by an ex-girlfriend of domestic abuse, allegations he has flatly denied. The race features a total of 5 DFL members and 3 Republicans. But the major question with national implications is the fate of Representative Keith Ellison. The race to replace Ellison in Congress is worth watching. One of the 3 Democratic candidates is State Representative Ihan Omar, a Muslim Somali-American progressive woman who is backed by Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. So interesting developments there. You might not expect to see someone with a Somali-American heritage running for public office, but this is the 2018 midterm elections. This is the groundswell of expected support from the Democrats, hoping to win enough seats in the House, possibly to go forward with an agenda that was espoused by Maxine Waters of California on day one of the Donald Trump administration. When he was sworn into office, the first thing Maxine Waters had to say was, impeach him now. So if the Democrats can pull off an upset in the 2018 midterm elections, then you might possibly see a push for someone to get a bill to the floor of the House calling for the impeachment of President Donald J. Trump. How likely is this? You know, that's the key thing. Do they have to win the midterm elections? Do they have to have a majority in order to pursue such a route? Or are the developments that we are seeing with the Mueller investigation proceeding to a point that there could possibly be a presidential impeachment without Democrats winning a majority in the United States House? Can that happen? Everyone has been wondering why, with his personal ties to various people being investigated and previous administrations, Robert Mueller has not recused himself from his investigation with the investigation into Russian meddling in the American election in 2016. We have already seen several trials in the court system already due to evidence which was brought forward from the investigation being headed up by Robert Mueller. Now, keep in mind, we almost always try to mention the fact, whenever we mention the investigation, that Robert Mueller is a Republican. The Democratic House Committee on the investigation, the actual 11-person panel in the House of Representatives, are all Democrats. So if you're looking to see something that has some form of balance to it, you definitely would not want to see Robert Mueller stepping down as head of this investigation, the investigation keep going, and then have a Democrat in charge of the investigation, you know, as the basically impaneled jurist, one might say, with the offices of special counsel having such broad sweeping authority as to be able to cause things to be investigated, which then lead to criminal prosecutions. We've already seen people working on Trump's campaign from 2016, like Paul Manafort, going into court the day before yesterday. The prosecution rested in this Manafort trial. There are going to be, you know, more things coming out of the woodwork. There is a supposed, you know, mudslinging or whistleblowing campaign, depending on your point of view, from Omarosa Manigault, who was working in the Trump White House. She was summarily dismissed by General John Kelly, who was working as the chief of staff for President Trump. It has come out over the media the last few days that the president, apparently in a recorded phone call from Omarosa given to major news media, expressed to her that he was unaware of the fact that she was leaving the administration. You know, one thing I can note from that is he didn't use the word fired. He didn't say that he was responsible for it. And one of the things that Omarosa brought out onto public view with the media was the president's phrasing of they. And then her question, of course, coming out to the person interviewing her, which was, what does President Donald Trump mean by they when he says they do such and such a thing? Does this imply that Donald Trump, the president of the United States, is not in fact calling all of the shots in his administration? That is something that begs the question, as we will see Omarosa probably finish making all the rounds. Of course, some people are going to say that she is just out there trying to push another book, sort of like the James Comey interviews on media. James Comey, of course, having written a book as well, It seems almost as if people can say, well, the only reason that that person is being interviewed on national news media is to promote their book. I mean, is that really the case? Is it really what it has come down to, that anyone leaving the Trump administration is, you know, is there to write a book? And an update, Ellison has won the Minnesota Attorney General primary. So we do have an announcement coming in that U.S. Representative Keith Ellison has won Minnesota's Democratic primary for Attorney General. He defeated four other candidates to win today's primary, days after a former girlfriend accused him of domestic abuse, and Ellison, of course, denied that allegation. He decided to give up his safe Minneapolis area seat to try for Attorney General for Minnesota when incumbent Lori Swanson ran for governor. He said it was a chance to make a difference in pushing back against some of President Donald Trump's policies that he says are hurting people. In 2006, Mr. Ellison became the first Muslim elected to Congress. He is also vice chairman of the Democratic National Committee. Republicans have not held the Minnesota Attorney General seat for more than half a century. Randy Bryce, a union iron worker known as the Iron Stash, meaning mustache, has won the Democratic primary in the race to replace retiring House Speaker Paul Ryan. Mr. Bryce defeated Janesville school teacher Kathy Myers in today's primary. Former Ryan aide Brian Steele was the Republican frontrunner, facing token opposition in the primary. Mr. Bryce captured national attention with a slick announcement video last year before Paul Ryan announced his retirement. He's raised more than $6 million, six times what Myers brought in, and he's won endorsements from Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders and labor activist Dolores Huerta. For 20 years, but argue that Bryce's past, which includes failing to pay child support and a 20-year-old drunken driving arrest, makes him unreliable and unelectable. Jennifer Zielinski has won a three-way Republican primary for the Minnesota seat in Congress, being vacated by Democrat Keith Ellison. The 35-year-old Ms. Zielinski had the GOP endorsement over two little-known rivals. She is a business services worker for Allina Health, who has not held elected office before. The Minneapolis, Minnesota area seat is so reliably liberal that a Republican has not held it since 1960. She will face Minnesota State Representative Ilhan Omar, the nation's first Somali-American legislator. She won the Democratic primary today. Ellison was leaving the seat, of course, to run for state attorney general. Wisconsin State Schools Chief Tony Evers has won the Democratic primary for governor and will face Republican Governor Scott Walker in November. Evers emerged from a field of eight candidates at the close of today's primary. He was the only candidate to have won election statewide before and now faces his biggest challenge against Scott Walker. Scott Walker has built up a big financial advantage for his reelection bid. He's already run more than a dozen television ads touting his record of the past 8 years. The 66-year-old Evers has been the state's education chief since 2009 and has clashed with Scott Walker in the past on mostly education issues. Walker's campaign and Republicans criticized Evers for not revoking the license of a teacher who was caught viewing pornographic emails on his school computer. Minnesota State Representative Ilhan Omar, the nation's first Somali-American legislator, has won a crowded Democratic primary to replace Representative Keith Ellison in Congress. Omar's victory today all but ensures that she will set another historic mark as the first Somali-American in Congress, Minnesota's 5th congressional district includes Minneapolis and surrounding suburbs that tilt heavily Democratic. Ms. Omar positioned herself as the best equipped to counter President Trump's administration. She rose to national prominence after winning her legislative seat in 2016. The first-term lawmaker defeated former State House Speaker Margaret Anderson Kelleher, State Senator Patricia Torres Ray, and others. Ellison triggered a scramble for the seat when he filed a last-minute run for Minnesota State Attorney General. You know, it's just really bizarre, you know, to watch all of this. And that is like one of the battleground states in one of the situations. As we had talked at the beginning of the show about Wisconsin, Minnesota, Illinois, Ohio, Michigan, all having these gubernatorial races and several House seats and Senate seats up for grabs in the 2018 midterm elections. Now, a lot of people forget that President Trump won the margin of popular vote by, you know, less than 80,000 votes in those three states to win the electoral votes for those states, meaning that those states are winner take all. And by such a small margin in each one of those states, they are being watched during the primaries for backlash. And of course, the Democrats will be pumping millions of dollars into these midterm elections, win or lose, trying to drum up support to see if, in fact, there can be any sort of backlash against Donald Trump where it can be taken to the floor of the Senate. And I mean, that's a heck of a thing to pin all of your hopes on a midterm election, on whether or not you can then make a push to try to unseat the sitting president during her midterm election. Well, I mean, that tells you what kind of a national strategy you're looking at. It, you know, almost to, for the lack of a better word, it almost seems like it is an act of desperation, almost like it was, you know, unorganized, except for keeping the Mueller investigation going. And I've said this before, this is just my personal opinion, folks, here on Voice of the People Radio on United Public Radio Network. It is not the opinion of the station ownership, or I don't even know any other hosts hold this opinion, but I have said this before, I believe that the Mueller investigation is going to continue until the midterm elections are over. I don't see an end to the Mueller investigation, and I have called it the investigation into the investigation of the investigators, because that's just how it seems to have turned out. It's instead of being, you know, an open and shut investigation, things have been pried into. Anybody who was working on the president's political campaign in 2016 has basically had everything in their life opened up and put under the proverbial microscope by this Mueller investigation. We have seen Strzok fired from the FBI in the past few days because he was texting messages basically saying F Trump, and that came back to bite him because he had to testify in front of Congress. And, you know, when you are working for these intelligence committees, and it comes out that you have such an irregular bias against the person that's being investigated, the proper course of action is for you to recuse yourself, you know, or at least to let the higher ups in the organization that you're working for, in his case, the FBI, know that I have had what could be interpreted as derogatory statements that have been made, and I disagree with the election, you know, of the president, and I should not be, you know, having anything to do with this investigation. I mean, it's, you don't have to be the top person on the totem pole to have yourself removed because of some kind of political difference. And the president of the United States has said, you know, again and again, that he believes that the Mueller investigation is Congress's version of a witch hunt. You know, and yet, you know, the president is also continuously plagued by things like, you know, these potential extramarital episodes, you know, payoffs, non-disclosure agreements, problems with attorneys that make the payoffs to, you know, various women that have been involved in these things. And it's like there's scandal being shot at the guy, but none of it sticks. It's, you know, it's like, I may or may not have had sex with that woman, and I may or may not have paid her money, and who cares? How's the country, you know, how's the country supposed to deal with that? Is it even entirely appropriate for it to be on your major news network? You know, I mean, it's, you know, yes, the can of worms was opened 22 years ago when President Clinton vehemently pounded the table during a television interview claiming that he did not have sex with that woman, Monica Lewinsky, and everybody knows exactly where that got him. You know, in such a situation, as my personal opinion, again, the president of the United States should tell somebody that's interviewing him for national news like that, I have a country to run. I don't have time to answer spurious questions like this, and just simply get up and leave the interview. You know, it's almost to me as if ego has gotten in the way with these things when it came to President Clinton. I mean, that's kind of obvious. And then when it is, you know, the current president, Donald Trump, it's kind of a laissez-faire attitude about, you know, these things go on. You know, I have hundreds of millions of dollars and I don't really care. And it doesn't seem to really even publicly faze the guy that, you know, these things come out into the open. A lot of things in the past have been completely politically derailed and destroyed from much lesser information. I mean, you can go all the way back to Gary Hart running in the primaries for the presidential nomination on the Democratic side, having his entire campaign derailed from the knowledge that he had an extramarital affair revealed during the primaries. We have come a long way in the subsequent 30 years in the United States that we just have, you know, ridiculousness compared to 30 years ago. How to go to get people to tune into Fox, ABC, NBC, CBS, you know, how desperately do we want for people to tune in to our nightly news? I mean, and then, you know, it's and it's not all the internet, folks. It's really not. It's just been a generational change, and it's for me, it's been an oddball. It's been an oddball thing. There's things that are, you know, in the news about things that happen with minor political candidates where it's, you know, you wouldn't want to come out with that information unless you were, you know, desperately trying to destroy that person's life because they are given over to having a life in public service. I mean, and then you have, you know, abnormal things. Yes, we had primaries in four states, you know, and then we also had a campaign staffer for a former congressional candidate in the state of Georgia. Young lady was age 30 years old, was a preliminary candidate for a seat in Congress, and has now been arrested in the alleged shooting death of her boyfriend and campaign treasurer. So we don't really have any more details other than he was shot and left possibly 2 days before the body was eventually discovered. And that he bled to death as a result of the shooting. But one wonders about either the state of mind of the former candidate who is now in custody, or whether or not there was any sort of financial malfeasance due to the fact that it was a campaign. And what happens with campaigns when you withdraw from the campaign? You know, there's a period of time under state laws and federal laws where if you are going to seek public office again, you are allowed to hold funds that are contributed to your campaign. The young lady in this case having raised probably little more than $5,500 for that particular campaign. So it's just nuts. You know, it's just very crazy. But, you know, focusing just because they happen to be catching the eye of the country at the moment, in Minnesota, which has a storied history with Democratic voters. The primary election day had a high turnout and a high level of enthusiasm. The polls were open around the state until 8 p.m. Voters were narrowing the field of candidates for governor, U.S. Senate, Congress, and other seats. So it's just been bizarre. You know, and when I had mentioned DFL as the party before, in Minnesota, it's Democratic Farmer and Labor Party, not just the Democratic Party, and then the Republican Party. So now they haven't come out with an extra political party. That just happens to be what the party is named in Minnesota. You know, and it's really strange. The polls opened at 7 a.m. and polling places around the Twin Cities have seen a steady stream of voters through their early afternoon. The election officials were predicting a higher than average turnout, particularly because requests for absentee ballots surged this year due to the midterm elections. In the city of Minneapolis, elections officials reported that about 31,000 people had voted by 12:30 p.m. on top of the more than 14,800 Minneapolis residents who voted early. And that's already far more than the approximately 35,200 people who voted in the 2016 primary and the 29,100 who voted in 2014. So in Minnesota, at least, the number of voters has gone up. I think that's the thing that the Democratic Party is trying to latch onto, is that there will be a high voter turnout because of historically low voter turnouts in states where the Republicans, they have majorities in the House and Senate in many, you know, many states. It's, you know, it's almost like the Republican Party has taken over middle America, and the Democrats are looking at a situation where their strongholds are the East Coast liberal bastions and the West Coast, meaning California and Southern California, and the upper Northwest with the states of Washington and Oregon historically voting on the Democratic side of the ticket. And it seems that and the Northeast East corridor, or, you know, from Maine down through Eastern Pennsylvania and New Jersey, Delaware, Connecticut, Maryland, you know, the entire 95 corridor, you might say, voting in the past presidential election, you know, on Democratic lines. And it's kind of, you know, even if they'd lose the entire state, you know, in that particular area, it seems to just have more of a hold for the Democratic Party, but not so in the thousands of counties. And in this majority of the states across the country, there are a lot of local county offices that are held by Republicans throughout states and the United States. And it's just something that we haven't seen flipping around the other way with any of these local elections and the primaries for the House and Senate. You know, it's just it's one of those. You know, one of those the craziness things. You know, Randy Bryce has won the Democratic Party primary in Paul Ryan's home district. He defeated Kathy Myers, public school teacher. He shot to national prominence last year with a viral campaign video. The district is currently, of course, represented by House Speaker Paul Ryan, Republican of Wisconsin, who announced his retirement early this year. Bryce challenged Ryan to switch jobs with him, and that challenge being done on an online video went viral. He was endorsed by the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, as well as Senator Bernie Sanders. So, at the time, about 20 minutes or so ago, Bryce was actually leading Myers by about 21 points. During the campaign, Bryce had said that Medicare for All was one of the most galvanizing issues for voters that he met on the trail. They're hungry for it. My ears are still ringing from the cheers of people, Bryce said, referring to the audience reaction at a rally where he talked about single-payer health coverage. It's something that affects everybody, and it's more than past due for us to look after each other. His campaign also attracted national attention earlier in the campaign when his staff became the first campaign staff to unionize. After Paul Ryan's announcement that he would be retiring, Bryce lost his foil, meaning his villain to play against, and tensions have flared between Bryce and Myers. Myers criticizing the fact that Bryce had never won an election in the state, as well as a drunk driving conviction from 20 years ago. It is going to be interesting because, you know, if we can elect a president who has had several wives and always has allegations from women coming out of the woodwork, even on the presidential, you know, campaign trail, and still winning an upset victory in the Electoral College, albeit by not by popular vote, then, you know, somebody that is seeking a congressional seat shouldn't really have that much of a problem. It's just in my opinion, it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. You know, for a lot of Democratic candidates, they're trying to put themselves in the position of saying that they are an alternative for the voters who are showing dissatisfaction with Donald Trump and the Republican Party. It has, you know, has been touted in the Wall Street Journal by them saying Wisconsin primary shows waning power of state's GOP leaders. So when the Wall Street Journal picks you up and says that your state may be up for grabs in the midterm elections, there is something that needs to be done if you're a Republican in any of those states that we mentioned at the top of the show, in trying to galvanize and make sure that your ground support is there. It is going to be hard for a lot of Republicans who have a bad taste in their mouth after the election of President Trump to go to the polls and support some Republican candidates, especially when the actual midterm general election rolls around in November. They have not seen a groundswell of support, as the media also has not been pushing backlash for Democrat candidates and an anti-Trump movement across the country. You know, what is your opinion? Let me know at voiceofthepeopleradio@gmail.com, and I will read that email, and I do respond to all emails to the show. If you have a suggestion for a topic on a future show regarding a political issue or such, you can also send it to voiceofthepeopleradio@gmail.com and just put in the subject line idea for Tuesday night political format show. You know, it is just, you know, it's been a bizarre primary season for some of these people, and you have candidates coming out of the woodwork hoping to rise to fame on the wave of anti-Donald Trump sentiment. When you look at the state of Nebraska, you know, it's, and of course, coming up on the end of the show here, but Nebraska's, you know, marquee races for governor and U.S. Senate shook out as expected today after the polls closed for the state's primary election. And so it's kind of, you know, no big surprise there. Nebraska was one of those states where it was thought about that whether or not the President Trump was going to be able to even carry the state. And it's just, you know, it has been what it has been. Do you personally think that President Trump is doing a good job at the moment? There's a lot of, you know, a lot of people are saying that the president's not doing as good of a job as they thought he was doing 6 months ago. It's just very strange. But we're going to try to keep up on some of that as we go along. And I don't know. It's for me, it's just been, I think with the emphasis on what has been happening in Wisconsin and Minnesota, personally for me, this is a litmus test because of the fact that those states long had national candidates. You might remember Vice President Walter Mondale coming out of Minnesota and running for president against Ronald Reagan in 1984, with the Democrats nominating the first female vice presidential candidate in Geraldine Ferraro. And to turn things on their heads, 34 years later, you're looking at whether or not those states are not going to necessarily revert back to being what somebody might consider a Democratic stronghold, but seeing more grassroots and local activism by members of the Democratic Party in those states which were formerly known as being heavily Democratic. We've also seen a large population shift in the states where, you know, where Trump won the election by the skin of his teeth population wise a lot of migration to southern states. Why the state of Florida, beginning in the 1996 election, going through to the, you know, pivotal 2000 election result with Bush versus Gore, and continuing on through 2016, a question is whether or not Trump was going to eventually end up capturing Florida and its electoral votes. The shift of the population from states like Ohio, New York, Wisconsin, Minnesota, Nebraska, Iowa, places where people have been retiring to Arizona, New Mexico, Southern California, increasing their populations, increasing the amount of representation they have there, and coming out kind of on the Republican side of things. I don't know if it's a fair thing to say that people tend to vote more conservatively in the United States as they age now, meaning the baby boomer generation that is retiring to places like that, and that has really influenced it, or, you know, whether or not that is going to have any effect in any kind of groundswell in Trump opposition come the general election for these midterms in November. Again, let me know what your opinion is. Go to your email, send me an email in my inbox at voiceofthepeopleradio@gmail.com. Let me know whether you hated it or loved it, especially if you didn't really like it and you wanted to hear something else. Believe me, I'm understanding about that. But we do intend to try to keep up on some of these races as they go along throughout the primaries and through the general election for the midterms coming up in 2018. Also, you can expect possibly some more podcasting as some more of these election results come in. I will be posting those up to SoundCloud. You can go to soundcloud.com/UPRN, and you can see those podcasts as they come up listed for Voice of the People Radio as we update some of this primary information or bring you some of the more interesting candidates. We thought that it might be interesting for you to hear about a female Somali American Democratic candidate and having, you know, having further success, having won a seat in 2016 and having gone further in a primary. We will see what happens. It's just crazy. I'll get a little more into that, talk a little bit more about things like the Democratic Socialists suffering another loss in their Hawaii primary. That's an interesting thing. How many people out there definitely understand, who are voting age, the difference between socialism and what is normally touted as the platform of the Democratic Party per se? That has been an issue since the word socialism was bandied about concerning the presidential campaign of Bernie Sanders in 2016. And it looks like Bernie Sanders winning that primary in Vermont for the Democratic Party, even though he is going to turn that nomination down and run as an independent in Vermont yet again. If he happens to win his Senate seat and take his oath of office again for the United States Senate, I'm pretty sure you're going to see Bernie Sanders announcing either a campaign as a Democrat or as an independent for the presidential race in 2020. So sound off, let me know what you think about that. voiceofthepeopleradio@gmail.com. Of course, don't forget to go to the UPRNtalkradio.com website. That's UPRNtalkradio.com. Click on the YouTube banner at the top of the page. Go over to the YouTube channel and click subscribe, because that helps us build the YouTube subscriber base for all of you listening on other audio outlets and podcasts such as Podbean, iHeartRadio, iTunes. No, we're not going anywhere. We are just trying to get the numbers up on the YouTube channel. As always, go to the YouTube channel from UPRNtalkradio.com and click subscribe. That will definitely help us out.
You're hungry and you have
so stay tuned for a little bit of craziness as you go through the late night here on United Public Radio Network. Coming up in a little while here, you'll be able to hear Dave Scott and Spaced Out Radio on UPRN. So enjoy that. Until next Tuesday at the same time, 10 p.m. Eastern, this is Greg Miller with Voice of the People Radio saying have a great night, everybody.